And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. I'm in Kandersteg today in the Berner Oberland, the Bernese Oberland, the Alps of the Canton of Bern. It's truly glorious up here. And I've been invited again by Kandersteg's most famous son, though he might blush to hear me say that, but it is a fact. Adolf Oggi is my guest again, or to be correct, I'm his guest again. I'm up here at 1,174 metres, that's over 3,500 feet, for those of you listening who like to know these things, exactly 7 years, almost to the day that I was here the first time. He's invited me back, believe it or not, and it's an honour and a privilege to spend time with you, Mr. Oggi. Thanks for inviting me, and welcome back to the McKay Interview.
It's wonderful to have you, Michael, again here in Kandersteg. As you saw it, it's a wonderful place. It's a place where people live in good conditions, and of course we have to work on it that every day the place stays attractive, and we will have a lot of tourists coming up to see Kandersteg and the region.
Now, Swiss people listening will certainly know your name, but if you're new, or at least relatively new to this country, let me tell you that my guest was twice president of the Swiss Confederation in 1993 and the year 2000, and a federal councillor for 13 years with responsibility in two different periods for the important federal departments which handle transport, communications and energy, and then defence, civil protection and sports. And civil protection, basically the army and those areas associated with it, and sports. And we're going to talk about sport later on in our conversation. Many would agree with me that he was the most popular and admired Swiss politician of the latter part of the 20th century. And it's hard to believe, honestly, hard to believe that he retired from the Federal Council 24 years ago. Mr. Oggi, Dulf, if I may. First question, just to remind you, when we sat together, almost in the same two Chesterfield chairs up here in Kandersteg in the Hotel Victoria, you told me about your experience in Sapporo, the Winter Olympics in 1972, and you told me, this man born in the tropics of Jamaica, that there are two kinds of snow. And I didn't know, I just thought all snow was white. Just very briefly, what are the two kinds of snow? Japanese and Swiss.
The Japanese snow has not the same structure as the snow here in the Alps. The Japanese snow you can blow away. It's very light. And for skiers, for competition skiers, for the athletes, it's very important to feel and see the difference. That has to do with the wax.
To feel underneath the skis, you mean, when you say feel?
You have to know that the Japanese snow, you have to treat it in another way.
I see, okay.
You have to need another wax.
Okay.
You have to need maybe other productions of skis.
So, listeners, if you want to be successful,
you have to feel this difference.
You need to know that the master is explaining to the student, I never would ever go near a black slope in my life, so I don't know about these things, and I'm most grateful to you for the explanation, though. First question, tell me, how do you spend your time these days?
I spend my time 4 to 5 months here in Kandersteg, and the rest in the surrounding of Bern. When I am here in Kandersteg, I try to ski 2 to 2.5 hours.
Each day?
Each day, if possible. And it's not always
because
possible.
Because of the weather, it stops you. But other than that,
not only the weather, duties.
Duties, okay.
I try to prepare my speeches.
Yeah.
Lately, I was at the University of Bern and at the University of Lausanne. So you have to prepare that.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Then I have to prepare meetings. Meetings, for example, tomorrow I will see the mayor from the town of Thun in the Bernese Oberland. or meetings with students, very often students ask me to explain them how we try to realize the two tunnels Neat through the Alps.
And these are students?
One at Gotthard and the one here in the Lötschberg region.
I know there are a lot
of... It was a success. How you prepared that, how you prepared the message,
yes,
and how you tried to persuade the population of Switzerland that we could start the biggest project in Switzerland.
So
cost 20 billion Swiss francs.
20 billion
and
Swiss
we did
francs.
It, we did it successfully. We did it without any... Of course, we had a lot of problems, but no scandal.
Yeah. No, the reason I was going to interrupt you, but you've answered my question. These students are essentially Swiss students, not international foreign students, or a mixture of both.
Usually Swiss
students.
Students,
and they're interested to know the mechanics. How do you persuade people to move the population forward with a grand project?
We were under pressure. We were under pressure from the European Union. The European Union wanted a second motorway through the Alps.
What year was this, roughly?
That was when I started my job at the Federal Council.
Yeah.
88.
1988. Oh, going back as far as that.
Yes. Yeah. And then we said, we accept to transport the goods through the Alps, but not by a new motorway. We do it through our railway, and we are prepared to build two tunnels through the Alps.
So if I understand
you... Two tunnels through the Alps, one of 64 kilometers, and the other one, Gotthard, and the other one, 36 kilometers. And we did it with success. We did it not only for Switzerland, we did it also for Europe.
Yes. And so that you're telling me then that the government in Bern was able to speak directly to the European Commission and say, no, not that way, but the way we want to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Now, the other question I wanted to ask you, which we've sort of come into from a slight angle, you're at the stage of your life now where you can pick and choose what you want to do, what you like to do. What are the things that you pick to do that you really, really gives you pleasure, that you want to do?
As I said before, 4 to 5 months I'm living here in Kandersteg. I have my house here. In that time, I try to load up the batteries, batteries.
Yeah.
When I'm in Bern, I'm very busy. Every day I have a lot of demands to come and speak, to give advices, or to write articles, or to meet people, students, and other personalities. If I can do it, I do it. Mm. If I have time, I do it. Mm. If I see that it is of some importance for the person who asked me to get in touch with him, I do it. But here in Kandersteg, as we are now, I try to, to load my batteries.
Yeah. Successfully.
I hope at my age of nearly 82.
Well, you're looking very good, I must say. You're a little bit older than me. We're of the same generation, but you're doing very, very well, sir. Listen, your life has been, in my simple analysis, sport, politics, and people. After your Swiss political career, Kofi Annan, from what I've read, and you've told me before, Kofi Annan, then the Secretary General of the United Nations, appointed you special advisor to the UN Secretary General, that's to himself, on sport for development and peace, if I'm correct in my recollection. Why did he come to you? And tell me, why is sport so important to you? I used to be a teacher. Of my first profession, I was a teacher of physical education. So I've been very close to teaching young boys about sport. But what, in your experience, can sport teach us, especially the young?
Sport is essential in creating a better world, a more peaceful world. Sport is a school of life. the best school of life. You can learn to win without thinking you are the best. You can learn to lose without thinking that's the end. To respect your opponent, to accept rules, to integrate, to accept the decision of the referee. You can learn solidarity. Sport is a training camp. Fair play and competition come profitably together. In sport, you can make mistakes, and you can learn from those mistakes. Sport gives you that opportunity. Sport should be made and played all over the world.
And can I ask you a question? Can I interrupt you? Do you think, in your experience, there's a meaningful difference between professional sport, where people play for money, and amateur sport, where people basically pay for love, particularly when it comes to young people? I'm just interested to know how you see the whole aspect of, because sport in our lifetime has changed dramatically.
You're right. I would say there are different cultures. Mm. You have to see the difference. But it is important, especially for the young generation, yeah, that they go through that school of sport. I know sport is not only good in itself, but it can do good. Sport does not form a person, but it can make a person better. Sport with its lessons, once again, of fair play, discipline, tolerance, integration and respect can help to solve problems. Sport is a toolkit for life.
And tell me something, a little bit about an insight into you personally. Why did Kofi Annan come to you?
Kofi Annan made in Davos 99 a speech. Mm-hmm. He presented to the world his Global Compact program. He said, we urgently need a better world. To achieve that goal, we need, of course, the politicians, maybe better politicians. We need an economic leaders. We need the scientific leaders. And we need the religious leaders. At the end of the year 2000, Kofi Annan said, in the chain, there is one link missing. What's that? That's the young generation. Never forget that the young generation of today are the leaders tomorrow. Mm-hmm. In all functions, in all jobs, in politics, in the economy, in the science, in sport, in the media, everywhere. And therefore we have to concentrate, Kofi Annan said, we have to concentrate on the young generation. If we want a better world, we need to focus on the young generation.
And then he approached you.
And then he appointed me. See.
And that was around about the same time that you'd stepped down anyway from being president, obviously, because that's 1 year, and from the Federal Council, more or less.
I left the Swiss government as a president in the year 2000.
2000, yeah.
And although during my function as a president of Switzerland, he asked me, what are you going to do when you resign?
I see.
And I said, I don't know what I'm doing. For the moment, I'm president. I have no ideas. And then when he heard that I resigned, he called me. I went to Geneva. I met him in Geneva, and he asked me to leave a window open for him. And I said, I'm really tired. I need 3 months to recover, and then I will decide. And at the end of the 3 months, he called me, and he said, I would like to appoint you as my delegate on sport with relation development and peace.
And that was the first time, huh?
Development and peace. Through sport, you can form a better world.
Yeah.
After my experiences, I'm persuaded that it is possible.
Okay, I understand. Now, this I find this a difficult question to ask politicians or people that have had a political career. But if I asked you to describe your personal philosophy, your moral compass, you know, your sense of right or wrong, when my observation of you over the years, and I met you first time when you were Minister of Defence. I was living in Zug. You were speaking to the British Chamber of Commerce in Zurich. I remember it very clearly that day. I mean, how would you describe what guides you put in your the way you deal with people, whether in politics or not, in terms of right and wrong, your moral compass?
When you are a leader, and as a federal councillor, you should be a leader. There are four things are very important. First, humanity. I repeat, humanity. You always have to respect your partner, whether he is a political enemy or a friend. So you have to respect, to listen, to pay attention, and to give him the impression that you take him seriously. Second, the mission. If you are a leader, you have to walk the talk. Everybody in the team must know exactly what is the mission, what is the task, where we go for. Third, leadership. You have to prove leadership every day. You have to take responsibility every day. You have to be able to take risks, and you have to show that you're a leader who wants to be successful. And the fourth point is communication. Communication is 50% of the success. There is communication towards outside, very important, of course, but also communication towards inside. It is important that you inform inside. If you don't inform inside, you don't have motivated people.
And just to make, because you mentioned a few minutes ago, listening. In communication, I take it you also mean listening, two-way communication.
Two-way communication, but as a leader, you have to do the two-way communication before you communicate outside. Or before you communicate inside, to motivate your people. Important is what you communicate, how you communicate. You can do it orally, or you can write on publishing a press communication, or where you communicate, not in the heated rooms in the House of Parliament, for example. Get outside. If you don't communicate towards inside, you have not motivated people. If you don't communicate towards outside, the people, the population doesn't know what you want to do. I wanted always that my country moves forward. That's the way I had to explain, for example, the two tunnels, cost 20 billion. That it's important if you don't construct those two tunnels, we will be forced to build another motorway, and we cannot accept, due to several reasons, a new motorway through the Alps. We will accept to transport the goods through the Alps our way, that means by train.
And just two more questions on that general idea. When you look back on your career, what were the toughest decisions? What was the toughest decisions apart from and which decisions or decision gave you the most satisfaction when you look back?
But first of all, you asked me about principles.
Yes. Yeah.
May I answer to that? I had several principles. First, I do what I believe in, and I believe in what I do.
Yeah.
Very important. Second, serve. You always should know that you should serve for a good case.
Yes, yes.
Third, do it. Just don't talk, do it. As a leader, you have to say, do it. Fourth, there are windows of opportunity. They open and they close. Sometimes it's not a period to propose, for example, the tunnel through the Alps. Politically seen, it's not the right moment. Economically seen, it's not the right moment. Or even financially seen, you have no chance to bring it, the idea, through Parliament. So
the window of opportunity is very important.
To feel the opportunity, then you have to propose. And fourth or fifth, you never get the second chance to make a first impression.
But hold on.
That means every meeting you have, even with people from the country or with a leader from or a president from outside, you have to be so well prepared that the other one wants to see you again.
Yeah. But can I ask you a question on that? I've never held elective office, so I have to listen to what you say. But there was a great remark made by Harold Macmillan when he was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom about events. The thing that can destroy your leadership are events, because you don't know where they're going to come from. How do you deal with events that are unexpected if you're the leader of a committee, of a federal council, of a country, and you don't know what events are coming down the track at you? How do you deal with that?
The way you handle with people, the way you speak with the people, the way you present the ideas, for example, in a direct democracy like Switzerland, you have to persuade, you have to explain and re-explain. I would like to say in the late 80s until the year 2000, maybe it was easier to be a federal councillor
than
to die.
Why is that? Why?
Why? We had good friends around us. They understood our political system.
Around the country, you mean?
Neighbors. Yeah. They appreciated us. They had time for us. They came to Switzerland.
And that has changed.
Macron came just say, if I may say, to say goodbye to the president, Berset. But during 4 or 5 years, he didn't have time to see us. We are a neighbor.
Yeah.
Or, for example, the American president, they didn't come to Switzerland.
Yeah.
In the 80s, Clinton came every year to Switzerland.
Every year?
Every year. Yeah. And if you don't have the opportunity to speak face-to-face to those people, it's more difficult to bring through an idea.
I agree.
And the last impression I had, the leaders around Europe, they wanted to find solutions with us in the discussion, not on tele, not on the electronic
Zoom screen,
stream or things like that. No. That is different, though it was easier in my time. Now you ask me how you deal with those people.
Well, how do you deal with the unexpected? If you are taken by surprise, how do you communicate that positively to your people? That we need to go this way, not that way?
Should be not be taken by surprise. You should be so good prepared that you avoid surprises. It's not always possible.
Yeah.
But the way you behave, the way you speak, the way you appreciate your counterpart or your president or the minister you have to do with him, that is very important. So the preparation is you must know every details from your counterpart, from the man or the women you have to deal with, and not enter with the weather when he doesn't like the weather, or not enter with the family if he has troubles inside the family.
Yeah.
It's very important to know exactly how you start.
So preparation.
How you start the discussion. Yeah. Preparation.
Okay. My guest today is Adolf Ogi, twice president of Switzerland, and I'm here with him in his hometown up in beautiful Kandersteg in the Berner Oberland. Now, Dolph, when we met on radio last time, you told me some hilarious stories about your first meeting as president with President Mitterrand at the Elysee Palace in Paris and his subsequent visit to Kandersteg. And I remember you telling me that he asked you in the helicopter how many socialists lived in some of the villages below. Now, you must have many more stories to share. Is there another funny experience, apart from the Mitterrand story, that you could share with us today on the microphone that's not going to get you into trouble? Can you share that one with us? What springs to mind? One story.
In the year 2000, I was the second time president of Switzerland. And we got an invitation for the European Union. The European Union had the summit in Nice.
In Nice, okay.
France. Yeah. France was in the chair.
Yeah.
Was president of the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
And President Chirac invited Switzerland, the president of Switzerland, to attend this important meeting in Nice.
Yeah.
And in the Federal Council, we discussed long and intensively whether we can accept this invitation.
Yeah.
We are neighbor from France or for France, but we are not member of the European Union. Mm-hmm. That made the situation rather difficult.
Sure.
We speak French, and France speak also French. So after a long discussion, the Federal Council decided that President Ogi must go to Nice and represent Switzerland in this summit. And I had the Foreign Office prepared a speech. And this speech was corrected by all my five other colleagues in the Federal Council. And I have to read that speech. And when Mr. Chirac gave the floor to me, when he said, "Et maintenant, je donne la parole au président de la Suisse, Monsieur Ogi," Mr. Prodi, who was president of the Commission of the EU, he said, les Suisses veulent toujours des avantages et des exceptions. The Swiss always want advantages and exceptions. Mm. I got furious,
yes.
Put my speech away, and I said, listen, Mr. Prodi thinks that Switzerland, we want always exceptions and priorities. I will now explain you the history of Switzerland.
Yeah.
And I said and explained, since 1848, four different languages, four different cultures, 26 states, and 2,200 communities live in peace together. That is world record. Why is that possible? Because it is possible because we give to minorities always more than they would need. They were listening, and I continued and said, gave some information about our neutrality, the direct democracy. I informed them how we treat, the way we treat problems. I gave some information about our politics, for example, security, health, finance, international relation, and so on. Everybody was listening. Nobody left the room. And at the end of my speech, en français fédéral de Kandersteg, sans papier, one said, "No, we know what we must do. We must join Switzerland." I had the guarantee that my speech was understood. And the most important one in the room said, "Switzerland has done 1848, what we are with a lot of problems, try to realize for the European Union. Switzerland is an example. Mm. And that was the reason they went on discussing with us, negotiating with us, and also from their part trying to find solutions for Switzerland.
Well, that's not a funny story. That's a very serious story and a good story. For those of you listening who may not be familiar with the history of Switzerland, 1848 was the founding of the new constitution of this country, where the cantons came together, and it's a very, very important date in the history of this country. Can I just change the subject a little bit, Dolph, and ask you, you were born in Kandersteg and you still live here. Tell me about the changes you've seen up here in the Bernese Alps. Is the change in the climate, for example, undermining life up here, or is the community resilient and able to adjust? I mean, what do the local people, I mean, we just had lunch earlier and you seem to know everyone, you've lived here all your life. What do they worry about in Kandersteg?
We worry about two things. One is they may break up a part of rocks just over the Lake of Eschenensee, but it is under control. We have everything done what was necessary to advise the people, to alert the people before something would happen.
So this is a natural possibility of a natural rockfall?
That is a natural rockfall. Yeah. Nobody knows whether that will happen, but we have to
prepare. Exactly.
We have to live with that.
Of course.
And the second thing is down, when you're coming up to Kandersteg in Blausemitholz, there is munition. It's still in the mountains. And this munition should be destroyed.
Still from what, the Second World War?
That is from the Second World War.
I see, okay.
And that is a task which is not so easy. The problem is the road have to be changed to Kandersteg. The railway, they have to cover the railway. And it is a big, I would say a very important but difficult task to find the best solution. The parliament decided to finance.
The parliament being the federal parliament.
The federal parliament decided and voted a 2.5 billion francs.
So it's a big project.
That's a very big project to solve the problem. Yeah. And they will start with realizing the whole idea to realize and to bring out the munition out of the mountain, they will start in 2 years.
And without telling me any secrets, because you were Minister of Defence, could it be that this is the same in other mountains around the country, or is this a particularly big one?
I would say that's a particularly big one.
Pretty big one, okay. Fair. Then another question now, going back to your great legacy, the Lutschberg-based tunnel. It opened in 2007, am I correct, 2007, it was around that time? Tell me about the progress. I went through it once years ago, but is it overloaded with traffic now? And what happens when more and more and more rail traffic wants to travel through the Alps? What do you do then?
That is the problem of the day. Not especially here in Kandersteg. The winter is good, but it's not the high season for Kandersteg. The high season are the months of July, August, and September.
Yeah.
And we have, of course, the Lake of Eschenen. The Lake of Eschenen is very, very popular, not only for the Swiss, but also the foreigners who come to Switzerland want to see this wonderful lake in the mountains. But we have to do with the problem you just mentioned. We must find a solution to organize, maybe it's not the right word, to organize the flows of the tourist procession.
And freight, commerce as well, not just tourism.
We live, of course, in the mountain.
Sure.
Here in Kantersteg, I would say 90% of the people live either from tourism or from the railways or from construction, or there are still three farmers. Mm. That's all. And we must see to stay here. The young people, they must think, can I live on here, or do I have to go, for example, in the region of Bern to find a job?
Sure.
So tourism brings us also jobs, and we look after the region, we look after the nature. Never forget that. If you don't have people in this area, then the nature will be not as nicely as it looks now.
Sure.
So we have to find, I would say, an equilibrium between what we are doing with our plans and in the interest of tourism, and what we should not do it, because we will then be quasi overflowed by too much visitors.
Okay. Last question, Dolf. It's been a great conversation, but you're now 80 years plus. I think you said to me you're 82. I mean, I don't know what month are you born in. When's your birthday?
18th of July.
Oh, so you're a summer baby. So the birthday is to come.
Summer
baby. Okay. You've done exceptional things in your life, long life. What else? Three questions. What else would you like to do? What else do you plan to do? And being born in the middle of World War II, you've seen a lot. How do you see the world today? That's my last question.
First, I don't plan anything.
Okay.
I have had everything.
Yeah.
Second, I would like to speak about the future of our world. Exhortation. Mm. The world is out of balance. That concerns me and everybody. We have still wars, conflicts, violence, terrorism, diseases. We have natural disasters. We have hunger and poverty, and it is important that, if possible, the young generation acts, and we desperately need a better world, a more peaceful world, a world where our children are not afraid to go to school, a world where people feel free and secure, a world with freedom and justice for all. I know that is an idea, but there's a will and there's a hope. And our goal should be to build up a new generation, a generation which has gone through the school of sport, for example. A generation which has learned the lessons and the values of sport for a better life, for a better world. A generation which will grow up to become the leaders of the world in politics, in the economy, in the military, in science, in religion, in the media, and in sport. A generation which will deal with the problems of the world always in the interest of the world, always in the interest of the people. And now I say to end, I believe in what I do, and I do what I believe in. There is hope for a better future.
Well said. Bravo, Dolf. I've enjoyed our conversation very, very much, as I knew I would. I thank you for making the afternoon pass so quickly. I thank you for the rösti, which I had. It was Bernese rösti, and it was very, very good. On behalf of all the listeners of World Radio Switzerland, I wish you good health. I wish you a wonderful 2024 and a long, long life. I hope you'll invite me back again. My guest today up here in Kandersteg has been Adolf Oggi, twice president of Switzerland and 13 years a federal councillor. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael, for coming up. It was a wonderful time which I spent with you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
That was the McKay Interview. with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.